Hello everyone, and welcome back to Album to Album, or maybe I should say the rest is Album to Album, because this is a really 2025 moment, isn't it? It's my first ever emergency podcast. But this heightened state of affairs has been occasioned by the announcement of I Can't Give Everything Away, 2002 to 2016, the final retrospective box set that rounds off the series of career-spanning boxes that have been issued sporadically over the last decade. And the reaction today has been, well, mixed. From the frankly appalling artwork, to the lack of any tasty bonus tracks from the Black Star Sessions or any remixes of any sort. It seems, going on social media, that this is not what many of us were hoping for as a suitably dignified finale to the retrospectives. So, without further ado, I called up the old pal of the podcast, the musician, director of the Visconti Studio at Kingston University, and of course the author of Black Star Theory, the fantastic study of Bowie's final three albums, Lea Cardos. And in a very quick chat we had this afternoon, 9th of July, this is an unedited recording of our chat. So here we go.
Lea, thank you for joining me for this emergency episode of Album to Album.
I've got so much on my mind, Arsalan. Where to begin? I mean, this was the long-awaited box set. Everyone's been thinking, what's going to be on it? Are we going to have any exclusives? You know, are they saving up all the things? You know, we didn't get a Black Star Deluxe, and so we thought maybe we'd get some, you know, rumored little bits and pieces. And the answer to that question has arrived, and we get nothing.
To be fair, have we ever had in one of these retrospective box sets, have we ever had a really big surprise?
No, but we have had some treats, haven't we? We've had the Galster, I thought, was a good one.
Yeah.
Even though you probably could assemble some of those pieces from, you know, here and there, and it didn't have the, you know, the mythical what's the name of it? Shilling the Rubes and all of that. But still, you know, yes. It was still really nice to have some kind of contribution to the Gausser and having those extra string arrangements and Tony putting it in the right order and all of that. So that felt kind of special.
Yeah, yeah. That was lovely, actually. I think that's my favourite out of all the boxes.
So good.
Is Who Can I Be Now?
The design of it as well.
It's just...
Yes. Oh,
exactly. The design is just gorgeous. And we will come on to this because I know this is something I've been seeing all afternoon on social media as well. I mean, I think you and I are far from being the only ones who have thoughts. But if we compare going back, so this is going to come out, I think, on September 12th this year, which is almost to the day 10 years ago when Five
uh-huh.
Years came out. Now, 5 years is, so I think that was September 25th, 2015. 5 years was the first in this series of career-spanning box sets. Obviously, it came out during Bowie's lifetime, so it's a safe assumption that he had considerable oversight onto the compiling and the
right.
General concept behind this. So from the get-go, these weren't to be repositories of exciting,
true.
Unheard material, but rather gathering everything into place. That said, you know, I think as the years have gone by, we had hoped that there would be perhaps
we know
of more material that's out there. And the question is,
yeah,
if not now,
that's
when?
The question. But also, I think a lot of expectation now hangs on the recall disc at the end of the box, right? It's the one where we're like, is this going to be on it? And out of all of the recall discs, I think Recall 5 was great because, you know, there were so many remixes and extras and all of that. And bringing it together on the Brilliant Adventure box set, that made lots of sense.
Yeah.
And that really did feel like value added. Like that felt like, oh, we've got, you know, all the Omicron game soundtracks. We've got all these extra weird, you know, weird little bits and pieces that he did and collaborations. And so that felt great. And I think this one, I think, yeah, there was a bit of projection. Everyone wanted to have some extra Black Star stuff because as well, the Black Star record and the No Plan EP, they were very slim. They were very, you know, they just gave you just enough. They kept you wanting more. And so there was always, you know, the stories from Donnie and the band, how they cut all these extra tracks and we've never heard them. And so it's like this extra narrative to us, like, well, when are we going to get, you know, a little something, a little bit more of a taste? So, yeah, we didn't get it with this box set.
It is extraordinary because when we spoke to Donnie, I'm sure he mentioned there was stuff, you know, that there was plenty of material. Now, again, it's not something that has commonly happened with these box sets. But again, it just makes me wonder what could be happening further down the line. I mean, is there going to be a 15th anniversary edition of Black Star, a 20th anniversary edition of Black Star, where they might, you know, sort of delve into the archives and see what there is?
Yeah. I mean, they're going to run out, aren't they, of archive material at some point, and they might want to go consult hard drives and try and look around for demos and things, which in and of itself is actually, I think, a bit of a ethical gray area when you start rummaging around the half finished work of an artist that, you know, what Jeff Buckley's estate did with his half finished music and sort of put it out there as work, and it kind of doesn't stand up, and it shouldn't, because he chose not to release it. And so, yeah, but then, you know, you, as a fan, ethics go out the window. I'm hungry for more. You know,
it is difficult, because we will get to a point where we'll get into now and then territory.
Yeah.
When you know, there could well be scraps, you know, absolute barrel scraping bits of detritus on the studio floor, which will be magicked into, you know, into a new track or something. But let's go back to this. So starting say at the top with Black Star, and then working back, what would you have liked to have seen here?
Listen, Black Star as it is perfect. You know, it's my favorite. So I'm okay. I don't need another remix. I don't need another remaster. Mm. However, there are some records in this set that I'm surprised that Tony hasn't remixed, or they didn't ask him to give a remix for. Particularly like Heathen. Not that it's a bad sounding mix, it's a beautiful mix, but there's so much potential now with surround sound and Dolby Atmos to do something really amazing with that record and make it even more atmospheric and immersive, which I feel like is crying out for a Dolby Atmos mix. And that would have really got me. If there was a DVD Blu-ray of Hey Heathen done for Atmos, I would have been, I'll give you all my money to hear that. So I think there was a bit of a missed opportunity to grab Tony while they could, because he's so attached to this era. And I feel like his involvement as a creative, you know, not just a consultant, not just checking masters, which sounds like all he was doing here, and contributing to liner notes, but to get him to actually put his hands in the material again, perhaps just one last time, I feel like that's a missed opportunity with this box set.
Do you think, or maybe he just might have said no, he didn't want to do that?
Yeah, it's totally possible that he just couldn't be asked, right? He couldn't be bothered, or he didn't fancy it, or he's busy with other stuff. I get it. But at the same time, you know, I'm just sort of now speaking in the voice of the, you know, entitled fan that I am, really.
Yeah.
And I just think that, you know, particularly Heathen would just a little bit of an update, a little bit of a high def audiophile style, you know, version of it. I mean, I was even surprised to see Heathen put on one disc. I know it's not even quite, it's not quite an hour long, but again,
yeah, it's 50 minutes, something like that.
Just over 50 minutes. But like, for me, the quality of that recording is such a beautiful production. And such,
it feels longer, doesn't it?
It does feel longer, but I feel like it's also the kind of, you know, if you're going to have a 180 gram vinyl and you're going to have this, you know, it's sold to you as an audiophile experience, I would have expected a two disc version of Heathen.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. And you're right. I mean, considering what you're saying about a 5.1 or Atmos or surround or whatever experience, Heathen is the shoe-in album for that. It's such
rich,
it's got such depth. You know, there's so many wonderful textures and layers to it. I mean, can you imagine Sunday?
Yeah, right.
You know, Slip Away, you know, even
Heathen
even
the Rays,
Gemini Spacecraft, Heathen the Rays.
5.15, all of that would have been so good.
All of that is crying out for decency. So that is a mystery. Coming on to the next day, which you and I have spoken about at length, but...
Let's go around again.
I had a lot of length. But what do you think could have been done there? I mean, are you like, okay, remaster, fine? Or do you think there's potential there for a remix or some serious surgery?
I mean, they would never have done it. But you know what would have been good is would have been to have like a little curated next day with the shit songs cut out of it. Do you know what I mean? You know,
the next day slimmed down.
Yeah, yeah. The next day redux. You know, it's like the best of the next day. I know. I know that they would never do that, and it's messing with the canon. But you know, I'm really pleased to see the next day extra put there, as you know, right next to it. Although there's a bit of doubling up, right? Because the James Murphy remix appears twice for some silly reason. because it's part of the mix, the extra, and it's also on recall. Doesn't make sense because the Visconti Venetian mix then should be on recall too, right? But it isn't. So that doesn't make much sense.
But the James Murphy mix, I mean, is it, are they two separate mixes?
Well, no, it looks like the same thing, right? It's just the,
it's the same thing.
It's the Steve Reich for the DFA. Yeah, it's the same mix.
Yeah.
That really long one. So, you know, it's like we get it twice. On vinyl, that seems very opulent, doesn't it?
Okay. That is strange. I'm just looking at the list now. I can see that, yes. So, I mean, Recall has got...
Oh, my gosh. Should we talk about Recall? Jesus.
Let's do that, unless you have any more thoughts on The Next Day. Well, jump straight to
Recall.
Well,
no, I mean, I was thinking about the mix of The Next Day, and I think the remasters is all right. I mean, I'm keen to hear it. It may be sound a little bit crisper, but, you know, the mix was fine. It doesn't feel like it's been dated, you know, by technology and by our standards of aesthetics and listen to really good audio. It doesn't feel like it's missing out or needs, you know, scaling up at all yet. That's fine. A remaster's fine. And as I say, I'm happy that they haven't touched Black Star. It sounds really great, you know.
It does, doesn't it? I mean, I think it's just too recent to warrant any sort
of substantial...
You say
that, it's nearly 10 years. I mean, it's a decade.
Do you think that... Gosh.
Time is flying by.
Bloody hell. All right. So, okay. I'm intrigued as to where Tony was on this. Did he refuse to do a remix a la Lodger, or was it just something that he wasn't approached about? So let's quickly have a look now.
Oh, are you suggesting that The Next Day could maybe like have a retooling? Do you think that might make a difference with some of it?
The stodge factor.
Yeah.
I mean, today I was listening to the de-stodged Never Let Me Down.
Yeah.
And that is remarkable, actually. I mean, it turns it into a really good album.
I know. And at the time, I think people were like a bit ick with it, but it actually stands up. Like, you listen to it now without the emotion of like, how dare they? And actually, it's got teeth, you know, like...
It's really good. Yeah. I mean, that was Mario Nolte who did that?
Yeah.
McNulty.
Wasn't it a dream team of like all sorts of people, like Nico Muhly and Tim LaFave, and like loads of people got together? And
really? Tim LaFave was involved in
that? I think, wasn't he? God, I need to check my facts.
What, in the Never Let Me Down rejig?
Yeah, the rejig. Really? They went and like retracked some of the stuff, didn't they?
Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah, I think so.
Let's bang straight onto Recall.
Recall 6.
So Recall 6.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. All right, where are these tracks?
Let's have a look at these. SACD mixes here.
Yeah, which I'm raising my eyebrow at that, because an SACD, that's Super Audio CD mix, it's not, I just wonder if it's going to sound any different. Like, we've got a version of Safe, and then we've got the SACD mix version of Safe, but I feel like in practice, it might not actually have any differentiation. Unless the SACD mix is... quadraphonic or something special, or you know, binaural, or they've done something like that, but then I don't know. I think it's just going to sound the same.
What I'm seeing here is SACD for Slip Away, Slow Burn, I've Been Waiting For You, 515, The Angels Have Gone, A Better Future, Safe. We have track number 4 is Safe, 2025 remaster, and then track 12 is the SACD mix, 2025 remaster. So you know, I don't know how many fag papers you can get between those two, but you know, it seems a bit odd to have those virtually back to back.
I mean, I'm just going to have a look at the vinyl version. Are they on there? They are. Okay. So isn't going to be like a souped up, you know, CD with the surround sound quality if it's on the vinyls, obviously. So it has just to be like a different mix.
My understanding is that, exactly, it's a different mix, a different mix of the track, which should be identifiable so that you should be able to differentiate Safe 2025 remaster from Safe SACD mix. And so that's intriguing.
Yeah, I just wonder if it's going to be minor, like sonic changes and really not like any kind of structural like edit changes or musical changes like a remix or anything.
This is the question. I'm hoping obviously for the latter, because then it, you know, it makes things a bit more interesting.
Yeah.
So moving on, we have a couple of tracks. Now, Hop Frog, that was a collaboration with...
Lou Reed.
Okay, that was a collaboration with Lou Reed.
And then we've got the Christine Young Savior track, which she re-released, I think, not too long ago.
Okay, what else do we have here?
We have the Sig Sputnik cover, which, you know.
Love Missile.
And we have that version of Waterloo Sunset with that really unfortunate synthesizer through it.
Oh, yes. Was that, did he perform that in the White Room? No, I'm thinking of someone. I'm thinking of Damon Albarn. He did that in the White Room. No, that wasn't Bowie. We have the Charlie's Angels soundtrack, Full Throttle Music from the motion picture, Rebel Rebel.
Oh, God.
I can't say I've heard that.
We've got the Rebel Never Gets Old, that mashup to Rebel Rebel, the Never Get Old, where it's just the Rebel Rebel riff and him singing Never Gonna Get Old really quick over top of it. Which,
do you remember when mashups were really exciting? Everyone was doing mashups.
Yeah, people couldn't believe it. I remember.
I know.
It was like, oh my God, it's two songs mutated into one. Jesus Christ. Now it's just annoying.
This is amazing.
Ruined two songs I like by putting them together.
Who was it? Do you remember Danger Mouse?
Yes,
the Grey album?
I do. Yeah.
And everyone was just absolutely losing their shit saying, this is revolutionary. all right, so then we also have another soundtrack. We have She Can Do That with BT.
Keep going. Yes, She Can Do That. That's unfortunate as well. I mean, it's scrappy, isn't it?
Yeah.
But all the Recall ones are a bit like this. So it is meant to just bring all of the oddities, right, together.
Exactly. It's an odds and sods compilation,
isn't it?
I mean, you don't sit down
and think. It ends really strong.
You don't sit down thinking, I need to listen to side three of Recall, do you? But then you just want to pick through certain tracks. Now, I personally love the Arnold Lane.
Yeah.
That he did.
Well, I reckon side seven and side eight are probably the only, as if I'm going to buy this box set, come on. But if someone gave it to me, then I would definitely be having side seven and eight of Recall to hand, because you've got the fashion rock stuff, which is just hard to find to listen to.
Yeah.
You've got to scrapple around on YouTube to get it. So that's great. Arnold Lane is there. Then you've got the great Love Is Lost remix. And then on the other side, you've got just pure gold, right? You've got those single edits of Lazarus and I Can't Give Everything Away. And then you've got the demo versions of Soon, Tis a Pity, which are brilliant. So
that is wonderful. But I remember getting the old style
Parlophone.
Do you remember?
Yes,
the Parlophone. That was beautiful. So that's lovely to have available here now.
There's a song on here that I forgot existed and I went and looked it up and it's the Sunday Tony Visconti remix. Are you familiar with this? Are you versant with it?
No.
It's
no.
Like,
where was that originally released?
It was released on the Everybody Says Hi single. And it's like Sunday, one of Bowie's most sublime songs. And it just sounds like a porno soundtrack. Like he's just, it's very porn coded. It's hilarious. And I hadn't listened to that since like, you know, the early millennium when that came out. So I listened to it before and it just really took me back to like Bowie Net days and just, it is so bad. I mean, I love Tony, but that's such a bad mix.
Well, that's track 14, listeners. Keep an ear out for that one.
More than a bit porny.
When I hear the track Sunday, I really don't think of anything remotely boudoir related. And yeah, here's Tony sort of like giving it
you
all
that
Barry
White. You know
what
this needs? White. It needs a beat. It needs a sexy
needs a beat.
Yeah,
well, I don't know what happened there, but he's got it. There's a big, big thing going on social media today about this. I mean, there's many, many comments flying around social media, but I think the one thing that everyone is united on is the sleeve art, the design. What the hell is happening?
It looks so bad. It looks like a cigarette box. It looks like L&M cigarettes to me. It just looks cheap. The blue, the font, what are they using? Times New Roman. Where's Barnbrook?
It's Times New Roman.
Where's Barnbrook? Where's the font?
Where is Barnbrook? Where is Barnbrook?
Where's the design? I mean, where's the taste level gone? It's this really ugly box set.
Do we know for sure that Barnbrook wasn't involved?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's evident. Look at it. I mean, geez, unless he had done it. I mean, it just doesn't look like him. It doesn't have the finesse. And yeah,
no.
I saw him a few months ago. It's not recently, a few months ago. And I asked him about, you know, where's the, you know, Black Star box set? That's what I called it. Like, you know, the last one, the sixth one. And he said he wasn't involved. And that was a couple months ago.
Wow.
So I think that it's true that he hasn't. But it looks like he's contributed, what do they call it, design notes for the 128-page booklet. So
I saw that being posted somewhere today that's saying Barnbrook is involved in terms of talking about the album art.
Yeah.
But he didn't actually do this album art. And that seemed to me baffling, because this is the final, I think for most of us, this is a really important one, because this is the final one. It contains the final scrolls.
Yeah.
And
it's the Barnbrook era.
It's the Barnbrook era, and to give it such a shoddy package that, I mean, even from the small, you know, JPEGs that we're seeing on social media, it is arresting.
It's disrespectful, actually. I mean, because you're looking at it, and it's not just the main albums. I think, wasn't he involved in the EPs? Yeah, he was involved in the reality tour live. And so then you've got all of these, like I'm looking at the graphic now. Every single one of these is a Barnbrook design, except for, I presume, Recall, which you can kind of tell. I mean, it's a shame, you know. It does feel a bit disrespectful to the design legacy. And, you know, David Bowie entrusted Jonathan with the design of his latter work. And, God, such an ugly box. I mean, the blue. Why? Why that color?
The blue.
I don't get it.
Typeface. I mean, the blue doesn't, does it have, it doesn't seem to have any correlation to any of the key albums contained within, does it? There's no relationship to any of those albums.
The only color relationship it has is to the reality tour vinyl is cut in blue.
I know, but still, come on. Of all the things you could pick up on as a design reference, why would you pick that? I mean,
yeah.
You know, I was thinking the orange of Heathen, you know, the brown orange colorways of Heathen.
The charcoal black. I mean, there's so much, you know. The next day was monochromatic and Black Star was monochromatic. And then there's big white graphics of the next day EP, the next day and No Plan with the star iconography. I mean, it's all very bold design, you know, symbols and black and white, gray. And then you've got this, Times Roman in like all caps. In blue.
It looks like it's been done. I was chatting to a friend here who's a music journalist, and he was pointing out this strange phenomenon amongst, you know, sort of either deceased or elderly rock stars of dreadful sleeves. He was pointing out Van Morrison, Dylan, you know, various people. There's some, you know, these absolute icons of the 60s and 70s have a kind of brain melt when it comes to current design tech. I mean, Dylan is probably one of the worst offenders here. I don't know if you saw the cover of Tempest, but it looked like it'd been done in 3 minutes in Microsoft Paint.
They did it in Word, then took a screenshot.
They did it in Word, exactly. But it is a shame that here that's what's happened. But
Leah,
I mean, to kind of wrap this up, I mean, we're going to get this, aren't we?
Look, if I see it in the bargain bin, maybe, if the price is right.
Come on.
I mean,
really?
There's a gap, right? I mean, it's a decade. It's like you want to have all of the pieces of the puzzle. I'll resent it and I'll look at it and I'll scowl and I'll be like, no, you disappointed me, you know? And there's no, we haven't mentioned the thing, which is that people thought Blaze might be on here, right?
Yeah.
And there's no Blaze. And
There's
no Blaze. And I think, you know, which I think I'm fine to say, because Donnie's done it too, that the song that people refer to as Blaze is actually called Someday. That's the real name of it. And it exists as a mix. I didn't imagine it. I heard it, but also Nicholas Peggs heard it. A number of other people have heard it. It is there. It's been mixed, mastered. It has to come out at some point. So the fact that it's not here, I mean, as you're saying before, maybe this isn't the right place for it, because really the unreleased, you know, shocking, you know, big reveals tend not to come out on these. But there might be a deluxe Black Star in the future or something else to come.
I mean, do you think there might be a deluxe in January?
Yeah. Feel like they would have announced it, or maybe they want to sell this and then they'll announce that. They really want to milk us of all of our money. Like, there could be that.
It would seem odd to do that, wouldn't it? To put Black Star into this box and then separately announce a massive deluxe, you know, I don't know, remix, remaster, box, Blaze, you know, all the sort of offcuts that Donnie's hinted at. You know, I mean, there's certainly no lack of material, but the question is how and when will it be presented to us?
I mean, we had Tim LaFave, confirming many years ago about the existence of this hunky-dory style when things go bad track that exists. I have a theory, Bruin, that Blaze was actually the code name for the Black Star Project in general. Mm-hmm. And that's why the words have been mixed up with it. But there's, the band have confirmed that there's stuff in the can. It'd be a real shame not to, for some of that. I mean, and then I'm hearing myself say that out loud. And then the person in me that's kind of feeling like, against necrocapitalism is kind of saying, didn't want them released. He didn't release them. So they stay in the vault. And then, so that part of me is at war with the greedy fan part of me that knows it's out there and wants people to listen to it.
Welcome to the world of Leocardos.
Yeah, it's hell, honestly, living in my mind.
Okay. Well, look, we have to leave it there. But Leah, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts.
No worries.
And if you don't buy it, you can borrow my copy.
All right. Only for that last recall disc, maybe.
Only for that last recall. All right.
And that was me and Leocardos reflecting on the joys, or perhaps the less than joyful aspects of I Can't Give Everything Away 2002 to 2016, which is out on September the 12th. And we will be back for more very soon. But in the meantime, thank you for listening, and do let me know what you think of the announcement today of the box set, if there's anything in there that you feel is missing, your thoughts on the design. And I'd really like to know.